Chick, it is so wonderful to be here with you today as part of the Charity and Security Network's Peacebuilding in Practice web series. That since as long as we've known each other for the past 10 years, you've been one of my great heroes in the field and my friend, my predecessor here at the Alliance for Peacebuilding, and I'm so happy to have the chance to talk with you today about your own evolution as a peace builder and your thoughts about our community and where we are as a field. So thank you so much for talking today.
Well, thank you, Melanie. That's mutual. As you know, great privilege, honor to be here and to be your friend. My own experience as a peace builder, for one thing, I never set out to be a peace builder. That was I was a Peace Corps volunteer back 45 years ago. And the concept of peace building didn't even exist when I was a Peace Corps volunteer, but became interested in what private citizens could do to make the world more peaceful. And you know, as an anti-war activist, for example, but peace building is something far beyond anti-war activism. And it was many years later that got directly involved. I became head of the National Peace Corps Association, the organization of former Peace Corps volunteers and Peace Corps staff, and recognized that there were a lot of places where Peace Corps volunteers had been that weren't very peaceful. And it bothered me. I thought that we've got to figure out a way to do something about that, and recognize that people who had served in the Peace Corps know the language, know the culture, and have developed skill sets through the rest of their careers and are motivated to try to do what we can to make this world more peaceful. And so that got me thinking about it even more and created some opportunities for me to get directly involved in some of the conflicts and to try to do what I could myself and with colleagues to try to make a difference. The first one was the genocide in Rwanda, where a colleague of mine had been a volunteer there. The rest of the country was doing nothing about it, and he called and said, "We're Peace Corps people, we've got to do something about it." And we did. We mobilized people who had served in Rwanda in the Peace Corps to go back and deal, didn't get directly involved in the genocide itself, weren't able to do that, but in the immediate aftermath, I mean, just as it was winding down, to go and meet with and work with people who were the victims and some of the perpetrators to help them rethink, to deal with what had happened and what had to happen to bring about safety, security, and eventually build peace so that that country could carry on. So that was my first direct experience in what we now call peace building. Didn't even use the term then. That was 1994. The word was out and about, but not very many people knew the term and even thought about it, but that's what we were doing.
And that was really prescient because you were bringing people from the Peace Corps who understood the local drivers and who could really talk with the people on the ground. That just was not being done.
Absolutely. And not to promote the Peace Corps, but I love to promote the Peace Corps. The real value of the Peace Corps is that you learn the language, learn the culture, become fully integrated into the communities where you live, and you recognize that it isn't us as Peace Corps volunteers that make life better, it's people do it themselves. We have a catalytic role, but we don't come in as the experts in telling people what to do. We simply provide a motivation and inspiration and a recognition that there are things that they can do themselves that will make their lives better. And that's what peace builders do, is peace builders don't actually build the peace themselves. They work with the adversaries in a conflict environment and help them find their pathway to peace.
What were some of the recommendations that came out of that process?
Well, the among other things in Rwanda, the victims were, of course, dealing with the stress and the trauma of it, and it became and the role of women became incredibly important. And this is also a bit prescient because back then, the role of women was not widely recognized.
Not at all.
There was a recognition that if anybody was going to save the day in Rwanda, it was going to be the women, the survivors who had endured and survived this terrible, terrible trauma. And so we worked with them to help them organize and mobilize to reestablish their lives, reestablish community life, reestablish a new environment within the country.
So many people think about peace building as ambassadors coming together and signing peace treaties, but you are working with people on the ground on the solutions they came up with.
That's right. That's right. And it takes all of it. Peace building includes ambassadors coming together and signing peace treaties. And I've been involved with that kind of thing as well. And it's extremely important, but particularly in Rwanda, but in other places as well, at the citizen level, the community level, that's where peace begins and has to be established.
So after 1994,
well, as you well know, I got deeply involved in the Ethiopia-Eritrea border war. My friend John Garamendi had been a Peace Corps volunteer in Ethiopia.
I see a theme here.
Yes. and he knew what we had done in Rwanda. And I'll never forget, my phone rang. It was John. John had been Deputy Secretary of Interior in the Clinton administration. He's now a member of Congress. But he called and said, check, my friends are killing each other and we've got to do something about it. And he was talking about the Ethiopia-Eritrea border war. And I said, John, I don't have a clue what we can do, but let's give it a try. And we gave it a try. We had no position, we had no authority, we had a little bit of money, thanks to Melanie Greenberg and the Hewlett Foundation, helped fund our travel and some of our expenses. But other than that, it was just a couple of people who thought they could do something to be helpful. We contacted the two embassies to offer our services and said, you know, we'll help if you think we can be helpful. If not, we're not going to get involved. We can only be helpful if you want us to be helpful.
And these are the embassies here in Washington?
The embassies here in Washington. And both Ethiopian and Eritrean embassies said, please help. We've gotten ourselves into a terrible situation and we can't figure out how to get out of it. Maybe you can help us. And the main thing we did was we listened. We respected both sides. Other people got involved and tried to tell them what to do, or took sides. You know, one side or the other side was right and the other side was wrong. We said we have one motivation only, and that's to help find a pathway to peace. We don't care who prevails, we don't care who is right or who is wrong. Whatever the drivers of this conflict are, they should not be resolved on the basis of who can kill more of the other side's people, who can inflict more death and destruction. That is no way to resolve these differences. And both sides agreed that that made sense. And so over a two-year period, we met with them regularly to help them find a better way to resolve it. And at the end of the day, reached a point where one side or the other was going to have to make one last concession. And it was a phone call that John and I had with the president of Eritrea, Isaias Afwerki, in which he reluctantly but agreed to make one last concession that resulted then in the signing of the peace treaty in Algiers. We were there for the signing of the agreement. So, the Prime Minister of Ethiopia at the time, Meles Zenawi, wrote us a letter saying, in fact, he invited us to have breakfast. He said, over breakfast, he said, I want you to know the war is over, and I want to thank you for making it happen. Mm-hmm. Like, wow. Just a couple of private citizens who just got involved because we thought it was the right thing to do.
How did you move from those initial discussions at the embassy to working with the presidents?
Well, we built a trust relationship at the embassy level, and they were so appreciative of what we were doing and respected what we were doing. And what they respected was the fact that we respected them. Mm-hmm. That made all the difference in the world. And so they contacted their governments and both cases, the government said, we want to meet with these guys. And we ended up developing a very strong personal relationship with the heads of state of the two countries. Met with them regularly. Anytime they would come to the U.S., they wanted to meet with us, and they invited us there, and we spent hours and hours with the heads of state in their capitals, helping to talk through ways to get past the warfare and find a way to resolve it.
New ideas, new frameworks.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And again, with not trying to adjust the position of the players on the chessboard for anyone's advantage, but simply to find a way to end the use of violence as a way to resolve this border dispute.
And I'm impressed that in addition to having the trust of the heads of state, that I walk with you down the streets of Washington and Ethiopian and Eritrean hot dog vendors come out and hug you.
That's true.
The results of this work went from the very top of these societies to the very grassroots.
Yeah, everybody knew. One of my favorite stories was at the corner of 18th and L, my friend Yeshu, who I didn't know her name at the time, but shortly after the treaty was signed, I was buying a hot dog from this vendor. I thought she was from Eritrea, because they have distinct features and accent, so I asked where she was from. She said she was from Eritrea. I said, I thought so. I said, I know your president, Isaias Afwerki. And of course, she just glared at me like, you know, who knows Eritrea even exists, let alone knowing the president, and said, who are you? I said, I'm Chick Dombach. She said, I know you. I know who you are. You brought peace to my country. I'm like, whoa. A hot dog vendor. She happens to be a wonderful, wonderful human being. We've become best of friends. But I can ride in a taxi cab even now, you know, a dozen years later. And a lot of the cab drivers here in Washington are from Ethiopia and Eritrea and mention my involvement there. And I'll say, yeah, we know who you are. We know what you did. And we thank you. We appreciate it.
So the power of two private citizen peace builders with this resonance even years later, this wonderful.
Yeah, very, very gratifying, I dare say.
And what is your sense then of how that work is translated into a broader community of peace builders?
Well, I didn't even know there was a broader community of peace builders at the time. That led me to connect with people who were involved with it and eventually to what became the Alliance for Peacebuilding. It was because of the work we had done that people in the peacebuilding field appreciated what we'd done and knew of my experience in running organizations, and so came to the Alliance for Peacebuilding and came to recognize that there is this emerging, growing, and extremely important community and field that we call peacebuilding.
At the time, it wasn't called peacebuilding.
That's
you were really
right.
Responsible for that shift.
Well, Lisa Shirk and I recognized that there was a language problem, that all kinds of different terminology was used to describe what it is that we do. And without very clear, specific, clearly defined terminology, you get nowhere. And so Lisa and I worked on that and tried several combinations of words and phrases and so on and reached the point of saying, you know, peacebuilding really is the right term to define what it is that we do. And so we were trying to rebrand this organization, which at the time, what was it that we were called?
Alliance for International Conflict Prevention and Resolution.
That's right. Way too long. And that's part of the reason we weren't getting very far as a field. We said, it's got to have that one word that people can grab a hold of and understand and rally around. So we decided peacebuilding was the right term for it, and so proposed that we change the name of this organization to the Alliance for Peacebuilding. It took a little while. People kind of, after a while, agreed, say, yeah, that's it. And then we, building on that, communicated with our colleagues all over the world. Said, you know, we've worked on this. We recognize there's a language problem. Can we not all agree to use the term peacebuilding as the term to refer to the kind of work that we all do? And over the next couple of years, it took hold, and now it's used worldwide.
And along the way, what were some of the biggest surprises for you in this work, as you've seen both your own work and the field develop?
Well, the biggest surprise when I got into it was the competition among the groups and the fact that peace builders had an awfully hard time building peace among themselves. I understand that with this organization, they had tried a collaborative project about a year or two before I came, and it collapsed because the people couldn't work together. And that kind of said, you've got to be kidding.
These are peace builders.
These are peace builders, and they can't work together. And so that certainly caught me by surprise. The other, I think, would simply be how much of a challenge it is to get a larger group audience, and particularly public policymakers, to grasp and understand and embrace this concept and how much it can contribute to the quality of life throughout this planet. It's hard work to get people who are, and I understand that, people are in the habit of doing things a certain way. And, you know, I know a prevailing attitude is people in countries have always gone to war, they always will go to war, and there's nothing you can do about it. And we know better. But it takes a while to get that message out and get people to believe that it can be done. But that's what we're doing, and I think we'll get there.
And you were chief of staff, of course, to John Garamendi. You saw this very fractious system from the inside. Do you feel that our own policymakers need some of our skills?
I think so. No question. Yeah.
Well, thank you so much, Chick. It has been such a pleasure talking with you. I look forward to many more conversations. I just want to thank you for everything you've done throughout your life as a peace builder.
Well, thank you. What a treat to be here with you and to be a part of this community.